So with about half of the New Hampshire vote in, it looks like Bernie Sanders is on top with 26.5%, followed by Buttigieg with 23.8%, and Klobuchar with 19.9%, Elizabeth Warren 9.5%, and Joe Biden way down with 8%. Not a good showing for Joe. Now, I understand he's gone to South Carolina. I don't know if they're skipping Nevada or what. But we'll see what happens for Biden in South Carolina. But tonight it looks like what was predicted. Sanders was going to win because he's the regional guy, and Buttigieg would show really well, as would Klobuchar. Anyway, here to share some thoughts with someone on the ground, I've asked New Hampshire State Representative Sherry Frost to come talk with us. Sherry, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for inviting me to talk with you.
So what are we seeing? What kind of energy are you seeing there at the polls where you're at?
I can't really speak to energy because we don't have turnout rates yet. I can speak anecdotally. I was the first person in line at my polling place, and there were a good 14 or 15 people behind me at 7 o'clock in the morning. So, you know,
that's a traffic jam in New Hampshire.
Well, you know, in our little ward, that's not nothing. I'm also a member of the Stratford County Committee, and we've done some, one of my fellows and I have done some work on the voter turnout trends, and we weren't sure whether this election was going to be a really high turnout election. I was of the impression that it would be because I do see an awful lot of energy. I know a lot of people are worked up about this sort of stuff. But then again, I recognize that I also function inside a bubble. You know, I live and breathe and work this stuff. So most of the circles that I run in are also of people who are terribly engaged.
Right.
So, you know, I recognize that there's a bias there. But I did, particularly with the impeachment and the you know, quote-unquote acquittal, although how you can acquit someone without actually hearing evidence is, you know, a neat trick, a neat Republican trick.
We could call it the cover-up that it was.
I had thought that would energize a lot of people. So I'm going to be really interested to see what the turnout is like, but I'm not surprised by the numbers that I'm seeing. My board just got updated. I've got 51% reporting, and Sanders is up by almost 4,500 votes. I'm not surprised by that. Most of, you know, again, I'm careful because I recognize that I have a bias. I was an early endorser of the senator, both in 2016 and in this cycle. And, you know, again, I run in a lot of Bernie-heavy circles, but I also have two young adult daughters, and the things that I'm hearing from them and their friends is that they're very energized for Bernie as well.
Oh, really? Because I would have thought they would have gone towards Mayor Pete or Amy Klobuchar, who seemed to be, you know, Klobuchar's, you know, gaining a little steam.
She is gaining some steam, and I think that part of that is a result of the narrative that we're hearing. You know, it's really easy to sort of fall into the conspiracy theories, but it does feel to me like there's a fairly wide swath of, you know, quote unquote establishment folks who are really nervous about a Bernie win. Oh,
yeah.
I just got updated and Bernie's margin went up. He's 26.9 now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's, you know, what's interesting is you see the, you know, the breakdown. You've got Bernie and Elizabeth on one side, and you've got you know, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, and Biden, you know, vying for that center, for that moderate kind of DLC type vote.
Elizabeth's showing is surprising me, really, because in the circles that I sort of run in, there was a big Bernie contingent, but there was also a really big Warren contingent. So I'm really a little surprised to see that she is coming in a pretty distant fourth.
Yeah.
That surprises me a lot. A lot of people that I really respect had endorsed Warren, and, you know, she's easily my hard second choice. You know, if we had ranked choice voting,
we're right there.
Yep, right there.
Yeah, we're in total agreement, because for me, they're the more progressive wing of the party. They're, in my view, ready to push for much bigger reforms and push against, you know, 40 years of this drift to the extreme right.
Well, and this is the thing I keep coming back to, Rick, is the idea of the Overton window. I was having a conversation with my students. I teach an after-school class. I was having a conversation with my students the other day about opposites. We were actually analyzing the John Grisham movie, A Time to Kill.
Right.
And we were talking about whether or not the jury in that movie was right to acquit the father for murdering his daughter's attackers. And we were talking about how to argue. And I said, you know, when you're crafting an argument, you're not trying to appeal to the people on the edges. You're trying to appeal to the people in the middle. And that led to a conversation about where the edges really are. And I said, you know, one of the things that we need to be careful about is how we frame these discussions. So I took the idea of abortion, for example, right? The far right position is that no one should have an abortion. Pretty simple. No one should have
under any circumstances, never, ever, ever.
Right.
Not even clinically, unless you're a rich person who can afford to go out of the country.
Correct. So no one should, not even then, really, but no one should have an abortion. But the extreme left position is painted as anyone who wants one should be able to get one.
Yeah, on demand. Donald Trump himself said, you know, ninth month, when you're racing to the hospital, you still got time.
But that's not the extreme left position.
No,
right?
It's
opposite of nobody should have an abortion is everybody has to have one. But that's not the conversation we have, right? The extreme right position on gay marriage was no gays should be allowed to marry. The extreme left position was painted as we should allow gays to marry. But that's not the extreme opposite position. The extreme opposite position is only gays should be able to marry. We're framing the discussion. We're allowing our discussions to be framed by these far right ideologies. And I think what's happening here, and I observe it a lot on social media. I listen to people at the State House talking, and the fear is that, you know, oh, we can't do too much too fast. And my question is, what's too much?
That's an excellent point.
What's too fast, right? Who are we coddling? Who are we comforting with baby steps? Every time I hear, you know, oh, we can't do that, we can't, you know, we can't move too fast, we can't disrupt the order of things, I go back to Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham jail, right? All along, black people have been told to wait. What the hell are we waiting for?
No, I mean, we've been waiting for the healthcare issue. We've been waiting for healthcare to be a right and accessible to everyone, you know, almost my entire life.
Certainly.
And we're closer thanks to the Affordable Care Act, but we're also further away because the Supreme Court, I do believe, is going to overturn it.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. And I mean, let's be clear: when the Affordable Care Act was being argued, I was my adopted mother's primary caregiver while she died of cancer, and I remember driving back and forth from my house to hers, listening to the debates in Congress. And listening to the news stories about how many concessions the Democrats were making to the Republicans and, you know, in the hope of getting their votes. And when it came time to vote, none of them voted for it.
Nope.
Right?
They were negotiating with themselves.
They're negotiating, right? When you need something, you don't start by saying, I'll take less than I need. You know? So I think about this in terms of the minimum wage argument as well, right? $15 an hour is the narrative. That's, you know, we want to fight for 15, and, you know, it's a nice, we like alliteration, it works as a slogan, that's terrific. But if you do some math, and I've had my figures checked because I'm an English teacher and I recognize that my math can be a little shaky sometimes, the average rent in my town of Dover, New Hampshire, is around $14.85 a month. That's average. Now, you know, some apartments are more expensive and some are less, but $14.85 is about the average. If you do the math and figure out that you're only supposed to spend 30% of your income on your housing, you need to make somewhere around $23.80 in order to afford an apartment in my district. Okay, hold on to that number. Put a pin in that number. Right around $23, right? So we're having discussions in the Democratic caucus and the Democratic, you know, the sort of state house circles, not official conversations, not official meetings, but, you know, we're talking amongst ourselves. And I keep coming up against the, you know, well, we're going to put in a bill for 15. And I'm like, screw that. We need a bill for 23. And they said, no, we can't do that. That's too much. We're going to ask for 15. Well, you know what? Actually, we're going to ask for 12 because we think we can get some Republicans to vote for 12. So we need 23. We want 15. But we settle for 12.
Exactly. I've been saying this for a long time.
So Democrats... hold on a second. It gets better. So we managed to pass a bill for $12 an hour that the governor vetoes because Sununu is the king of vetoes right now. He's vetoed more bills than any other governor in the history of New Hampshire. He just vetoed another net metering bill the first of the year. He's, you know, he's off to a great start, little mini Trump. But we knew that he wasn't going to sign any raise in the minimum wage, right? Our minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. He wasn't going to sign a bill that would bring it up to $7.35. We knew that.
Right.
So if we knew we weren't going to get 12 and we knew we weren't going to get 15, why the hell didn't we fight for 23?
I'm right there with you. And this is, again, one of those things where Republicans play the game much better than Democrats have done.
It's infuriating.
Yeah.
You know, so I think part of why, you know, sort of tying this back to the conversation about the primary, I think part of why we're seeing Pete and Amy doing as well as they're doing, and Bernie and Liz sort of, you know, I don't even know what the hell's up with Biden, but, you know, I think part of the reason that we're seeing Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar doing as well as they're doing is that sort of mindset that, you know, we can't ask for everything, like, you know, Hillary Clinton asking for the moon. Yeah, we should be asking for the moon. Nobody's saying that we're going to get 100% of our agenda passed.
Nope.
But any step that we make in that direction is going to drag that Overton window back into reality.
No, you're spot on, absolutely right. And I hope there are other Democrats out there listening to how you have to do this. So last question I've got for you, you know, coming out of this, New Hampshire is, you know, one of the early states. How do you see this springing forward? Who do you see, you know, coming out of this with the biggest boost?
That is a really interesting question, and if I knew the answer to that, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. I think that Julian Castro was correct when he questioned the validity of having the first two contests being where they are. New Hampshire is very white.
I've always questioned it.
And New Hampshire is very old. But, man, we've got a stranglehold on the first-in-the-nation primary. And, in fact, I'm going to put in a little pitch for New Hampshire Public Radio has a podcast titled Stranglehold, all about the first-in-the-nation primary, and it's worth a listen.
There you go.
I'm not entirely sure what happens now. Joe Biden's already in South Carolina.
Yeah, he's given up.
I don't know whether he's skipping Nevada or what the hell's going on over there, but he's already bugged out. I think that Bernie Sanders having such a strong showing in both Iowa and New Hampshire, I think he's going to do well in Nevada. And I do think he's going to do well in South Carolina.
And that, for me, that's the pivotal point to see how that does.
I think so, too.
We'll see. Sherry, I appreciate the time. Got to take a hard break here. But I look forward to having you come back again and share some more thoughts with us.
Thanks so much. It's been my great pleasure.
Great stuff. Thanks so much. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.